Funding for WPLN News comes from you, our listeners, and Bernstein Private Wealth, working with creators and innovators to invest with intention and build the legacy they want to leave behind. More at Bernstein.com.
I'm Khalil A. Colonna, and this is Nashville. Be all you can be. The Army is back to using the well-known line that many can easily quote. For me, one was, "We do more before 9 a.m. than most people do all day." My parents would remind me of that whenever I was late for school. But here it is. The thing is, for many soldiers, those words, "be all you can be," are true. Army offers work and education opportunities that give soldiers different ways to develop and reach their own potential. Senior Master Trainer Paul Gardner has been in the Army for 20 years and currently trains recruiters locally. He's joining us today to tell us more about the Army and the recruiting process. Paul, thanks for being here. Welcome to This is Nashville.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you inviting us out.
Really good. It's really good to have you here. Okay, so let's get into it. We're going to start with somebody who's at the very, very beginning of their journey, who's simply thinking like, hey, I might want to join the Army. Where should that person start?
Well, there's a couple different options. The first one would be is just to find your local recruiting office. Go and sit down and talk with the Army recruiter there. Or you can actually go on to the Go Army website. And the Go Army website, you can actually fill out a questionnaire, and it'll actually go to your local recruiting center. They will get your lead, the information from you, and they will contact you to set up a time and date for you to come and sit down and talk about the opportunities the Army has to offer you.
All right, so someone decides to go for it. They're going to talk to a recruiter. When they walk through those doors, is there anything that they need to know right off the bat?
Not really. There's not a whole lot you need to know, because you're going to walk in the door. You're going to get greeted by all the recruiters that are in the station. They're going to be very polite, courteous for you. They're there to answer all your questions. Biggest thing I would recommend for anybody, if you are thinking about joining the Army, is just have some pre-questions that you're thinking, like what's driving you to join the Army? What are you looking to get answered at the time of your first initial contact? That's the biggest thing I would say with them, is you don't really need to go in there knowing really anything, because that's our job as recruiters, is to answer all those questions for you.
So once they're in the office, what should they first say? What can they expect from the initial conversation?
The initial conversation is just going to, the recruiter is going to introduce themselves. Basically, they would walk in and say, "Hey, I'm Sergeant First Class Paul Gardner. I'm going to introduce myself to them." And then they're going to ask a couple questions about the person walking in. And then they're just going to go from there and just basically have a basic conversation like we are. We don't kind of drive the process in any direction. We want to do what's best for the applicant at the end of the day. And if it's the active duty side of the Army or the Army Reserves, we kind of help them with that. And if it's try to reach their goal at the end of the day, if it's going to college or getting a learn a trade, we help them with that. That's our biggest thing, is just helping them with all that.
Okay, break down the process for me. What happens between the initial conversation of talking to a recruiter and actually officially joining the Army?
It's a little bit of a process. So the first thing is once they decide they are interested and they want to join the Army, we put them on a practice test, a test to test their aptitude, to see where they score on a scale. Right now, the current score for us is 31 or higher to be able to qualify for the Army. And it's not based off a percentage, it's a percentile where you fall in. Once you qualify for that, we will give you a packet, build a big, long, it's like a job application that we give to you for security clearances and stuff. Once we get all that filled out, we get all your documents, we build it in the record, and then we schedule you to go to MEPS. MEPS is the Military Entering Processing Station. Once you're there, they will do a full physical on you. You'll take the actual ASVAB test, the Armed Service Vocational Aptitude Battery. That will generate what you qualify for and what's available to you when it comes to picking your job. Mm-hmm. Once you've completed all that at MEPS, you will sit down with, either come back and sit down with the recruiter, or you will sit down with the recruiter or the guidance counselors at MEPS, and they will go over every single job that you qualify for. Anything from medical field to military police, engineering, carpentry, masonry. There's over 150 jobs in the Army. So you will pick your job. Once you pick your job, you will know where you're going for basic training, where you're going for your job training, and how long of a commitment you have to give to the Army. Either 2, 4, 6 years is what you'll have to give, depending how long your job training is. And then once that's done, then you sign your contract with the Army. You don't sign anything before. We don't have anything that's open contracts, anything like that. You have to have a job in your contract before you go to training. Then once you're signed, you get sworn into the Army or Army Reserves, and then you're kind of in our Future Soldier Delayed Entry Program. And for that, that could be anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 to 4 months that you're in the program. And we kind of just work out with the recruiters in the recruiting station, learn a little bit more about how to be a soldier, and then you ship to basic training to wherever you're going.
So the signing of the contract and getting sworn in is a big deal. Can family members come to that?
Huge big deal. And yes, family members are invited to come out. I know when I sworn into the Army 20 plus years ago, my parents were there. It was a pretty big deal for them. So it was a pretty big deal for me to have them around.
Mm-hmm. So who's eligible to join the Army right now? Like, what are the official age, height, and fitness requirements?
For the Army, it's 17 to... It's actually raised up. It used to be 17-35. Now we have waivers for anybody up to like 42 years old. For the height and weight, you just got to meet the height and weight standards for the Army. It's height-wise, max height is about anything over like 6'7", 6'8". It's a little tough because there's certain jobs you can and can't do. Mm-hmm. We can't put a 6'7" guy in a tank.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work. And then the minimum height is, I think it's about 4'10". It's just because height-wise, restrictions, stuff like that. Weight-wise, we have a lot of different variables in that. It's just because we do a body fat percentage tape test. And if you meet the tape test, you can join the Army. So.
And fitness requirements?
Fitness, really nothing. We'll help you get there. We help you get there at basic training. Yes, yes. We're very good, notorious at that. Once you're at basic training, you will definitely get in shape if you're not.
Okay.
Very quickly.
You know, everyone who joins the Army has their own personal reasons for doing so. What are some of the more popular reasons right now that you hear from recruiters about why folks are signing
up? A lot of it is education and job training and experience. Getting that experience in a career field, because a lot of these younger generation kids aren't getting that experience like they used to, getting right out of high school, having a job, and then going to college, getting a job right after college. So a little bit of more experience in the job field, and then also college money, because we pay for your college.
Mm. Why did you originally join the Army?
Service the country. I really wanted to do it. I was 23 years old when I joined the Army. It was right after 9/11. Mm-hmm. Kind of pushed me to drive to want to do it. I had my dad and my uncle both served in the Marine Corps. So military has been in my family for a while. And so the 9/11 happened and it just kind of fell right into place. I planned only doing a three-year tour. My first enlistment was 3 years. And I planned on just to do that, get out and then go back and finish my job because I was working for DeWalt Power Tools at the time and kind of fell in love with the Army. And here I am 20 years later. And it's probably the best decision I've ever made.
Did you talk to a recruiter?
I did. I talked to both branches, military, the Army and the Marine Corps.
What was the conversation with the Army recruiter like?
Just basically, I told him what I wanted. Like, I wanted to serve my country. I wanted to go overseas as quick as possible. I wanted to jump out of airplanes. I wanted to do all the fun stuff. And he kind of laid out a roadmap for me to get there. And being airborne and jumping out airplanes was probably high on my priority list of things to do. So that's kind of why they beat the Marines out, because the Marines don't really have an airborne over like the Army does.
I understand. So, you know, when you signed up, you were going to serve overseas, likely in a war.
Yes.
How did that factor into your decision?
That was huge. Like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go and serve my country in that way. So that's kind of why I decided to join.
What was your first job in the Army?
I was a combat engineer. Basically dealing with explosives, reconning roads, road surveying, route clearance, clearing roads for roadside bombs, stuff like that.
If you're just tuning in, this is Nashville, and I'm your host, Khalil A. Colonna. We're talking this hour with United States Army Senior Master Trainer Paul Gardner. Now, you've had a long career in the Army, so you reenlisted a few times, as you mentioned before.
Yes.
How does reenlistment work?
When you decide you're ready to reenlist, you come, it's about a year out, usually about 18 to 12 months out from your end of service contract date. They come to you and ask you if you want to stay in. And they never really had to come and ask me, because once I knew I was in, I was in. And so I would just find them and say, hey, I want to sign up for an extra 3 years. What options do you have for me? Because they do have options in certain jobs. You can get a bonus. You can get schools on top of it, a certain duty assignment. So I reenlisted to stay where my duty assignment at Fort Carson, Colorado, and did an extra 3 years. And then that's how it continued on from there. Just 3 years, three years. And 20 years later, here I am.
Question for you. Something that's interesting to me. You know, people who are serving the military and the armed services, you're with everyone, all sorts of Americans. And a lot of us kind of only have experiences with other Americans in our communities.
Yes.
But you got to meet so many different people and work with so many people, protect and serve our country with, yes, so many different types of Americans. What has that told you about Americans? What have it taught you about the people who make up the citizenry of this country?
The biggest thing with that is everybody has a sense of pride in this country. It's not a one group over another group. It's we all feel the same pride. And when we're in there in basic training, job training, going to the field with each other and just working side by side every day, it just shows that it all walks of life really want to better themselves and better this country. And then when we serve, it's what I see. And I have friends that I haven't seen in 15 years, and one of them just retired, and probably about seven of us flew out to Washington State to go to his retirement ceremony and hang out with him over the weekend. Mm-hmm. So it brings us together, and it's all walks of life. It's not just one centralized group. We all just care about it. And when we're together in a group, that's what we are. We're just brothers in arms, sisters in arms, and there's nothing else.
You're married and you have a family.
Yes.
How'd you meet your wife?
I actually met my wife. I came home from Iraq on my first deployment for my grandfather's funeral, and I met my wife while I was home. I didn't know her before. I actually met her when I was R&R for 15 days. We talked a little bit. I went back to Iraq for 6 months, and we kind of just chatted the whole time. Decided that we really cared about each other, kind of fell in love just meeting mentally wise. And I asked her to marry me. We got married 19 days after I got home, and we've been married almost 19 years now.
That's good. That's wonderful. How do you approach the conversation about reenlistment with your wife?
She kind of forced me a lot of times. I almost got out of the Army at 10 years, and I was this close. I was about really super close to getting out, and she kind of sat me down and said, "Are you sure you want to do this? I mean, you're halfway done till retirement." And she kind of set me straight, and I reenlisted and continued to go on from there.
Is there anything that you would tell someone who's a little bit on the fence about considering joining the military at all?
The biggest thing is just make sure you do your research. Do what's best for you at the end of the day. Find the best fit for you. If it's the Army, the Marines, the Navy, the Air Force, find the best fit for you. Every branch offers something great. And this is what I tell all the recruits when I sit down and talk with them as well, is chop. I mean, that's what we're here for. You will find the best fit for you at the end of the day, and might be the Army. We hope it is, because that's what we're here for. But yeah, just look around and be open-minded, because the military is going to offer you a lot of things, and just find what you want and go after it.
Senior Master Trainer Paul Gartner helps train recruiters for the Army here in Nashville. Thank you, Paul, for being with us today, and thank you for your service.
Thanks so much.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking with a commander from the Navy about her experiences serving. Stay with us. This is Nashville.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm Mariba Knight, a senior reporter here at WPLN News. I'm here with Catherine Cecis, who actually produced this episode of This is Nashville, which is very cool. We are here to talk to you about our spring fundraising campaign. Now is the time to give to public radio. Join the folks who have been so generous. Leanne, David, Caroline, Angela, Elizabeth, from all over Nashville. I'm going to mispronounce them. Someone from Wisconsin. Thank you. Even out of state. Listen, you can stream us on our website, WPLN.org, which is also where you can go to give. Go to WPLN.org, press the big Give Now button, and decide the amount that is right for you.
Hey, Mariba. Hey, everyone. This is Catherine Cecis. I'm a producer on This is Nashville, and I am so excited to be here today. This is actually my first fund drive, and if anyone is listening and hasn't donated before, this can be your first time that you donate to WPLN. Go to WPLN.org or call the phone number, which you can memorize with me, 615-760-2010. People are waiting right now, and it'll just take a few minutes for you to give support to the station. I really enjoyed working on this episode. I love working for This is Nashville. I get to cover so many different things. But one thing that Senior Master Trainer Paul Gardner talked about was how everyone in the Army from all backgrounds and walks of life works together, and how soldiers are brothers and sisters in arms. Well, here at Public Radio, we don't have arms, but we do have ears. And when we listen to Public Radio, when you listen to Public Radio, we are listening together. It doesn't matter what your background is, where you're from, where you live, anyone and everyone can turn on the radio, hear a story, and learn something new. You're not the only one who is listening. You're connecting with people across Tennessee, across the world, even from Wisconsin, like that donor. And we connect in the knowledge and the moments that we share. Mm. But we need your support to keep that going, to keep producing the radio that you enjoy. You can give to give that benefit to yourself, or you can give so that others who also love the radio but might not be able to give right now can listen and enjoy it too.
Yes, and you do that by going to WPLN.org or, like she said, giving us a call, 615-760-2010. Come together as a community to back this irreplaceable service. Be here for Nashville Public Radio today. Be here for us tomorrow and the year ahead by giving now. And the beauty of public radio and the model of public radio is that you give whatever amount works for you. I'm looking at our board and I'm seeing everything from $10 a month to a $1,200 gift. This is the range. It can be whatever works for you. That is the beauty of this. It is not a subscription service. It is not required. It is just whatever you can afford, whatever the value of this station and the news that you get and the articles that you read on our website, what is that to you? Decide, think about it, go to WPLN.org, press the big Give Now button and decide. And then you can pick a thank you gift, of which we have many, many cool thank you gifts. The one that I'm really digging right now is the new t-shirt, because we haven't had a new like t-shirt in a couple years. And this one is made by a local artist. And when you give $15 a month, you can select that thank you gift. And we've got a bunch of other ones too, don't we, Catherine?
Yeah, we've got some really cool ones there. The $10 a month thank you gift is a hot chicken socks, which everyone loves, but also one that I'm really excited about and the whole This Is Nashville team is excited about is the This Is Nashville super fan lunch. You and a guest can come into the studio and watch a live production. And then we're going to have a lunch after with a Q&A with the host Khalil Ekolona on May 14th. So that is a $25 a month gift. No, you can do it. If you're able to. And also, I just want to say a big thank you to everyone who has given so far. But it's not too late to jump in this hour and, you know, give during my first pitch hour and have it be your first pitch hour, too.
That's right. Join Kelly and Matt and Anne and Robert and Austin, all of these folks who have, you know, really. Oh, there's someone from Texas. I love seeing the places that everybody gives from. It really speaks to our reach, which is, as we know, far outside the terrestrial radio, the bounds of terrestrial radio in this day and age. Thank you so much for giving. Join them. Go to WPLN.org or call 615-760-2010.
I'm Khalil Ekolona, and this is Nashville. The U.S. Navy's core values are honor, courage, and commitment. While there are plenty of land-based jobs in the Navy, joining the Navy can lead to serving on a ship, a submarine, or even flying a plane off and back onto an aircraft carrier. The well-known Navy SEALs are part of, well, the Navy. Joining us now to tell us how her experience in the Navy has been is Commander Lacey Popson. Lacey, thank you so much for being with us today. Welcome to This Is Nashville.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. My pleasure.
Really appreciate having you here. Okay, so you joined the Navy going to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, my home state. You know, all of the services have academies or colleges. Each has a specific selection and an application process. Once admitted, students, you don't pay tuition, but upon graduation, you commit to serving that branch. Tell me this. How did you first get interested in the Naval Academy?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, I grew up in rural Pennsylvania back in the 90s, you know, military service, particularly with an end goal of a, you know, college degree and a career of service, wasn't always a talked about option. So I had to seek it out myself. And in fact, I was really fortunate that a member of my high school swim team, a good buddy of mine, was a year ahead of me and had talked to me about his experience applying to Annapolis and getting selected. And I got bit by that bug. I visited the campus the summer before my junior year as part of a summer seminar program and was absolutely hooked. You know, I got run around with the midshipmen for a week and yelled at and got to see all that that academy offered in terms of academic, athletics, military service. And I knew that's where I wanted to go to school. So my senior year of high school, I applied to the academy, submitted my standardized test scores, was fortunate enough to receive a congressional nomination and then was eventually accepted. I raised my right hand in the summer of 2000 and commissioned in 2004 as a surface warfare officer.
How'd your parents feel about you entering the Naval Academy?
I would say certainly proud. I would say my mom more so than my dad, maybe a little bit nervous, right? I think it's a natural feeling for parents to feel just a bit nervous when they're sending their young daughter or son off to, you know, potential danger zones in service of their nation, but ultimately proud.
Okay, so you're at the Academy. How much actual naval training did you receive at the Naval Academy?
A lot, you know, 24/7, right? And I think that's the difference. That's the distinction between something like an NROTC scholarship program and actually, you know, attending a service academy is that, you know, you wear a uniform every single day of the week and you're in a very structured academic, athletic, and military training environment. You know, we trained in the morning, we went to class during the day, we participated in sports. After school, we studied, we ate together, you know, in squads as military units, and we trained together on the weekends, and we served together over the summer during summer training blocks. So it was round the clock, day after day, week after month, you know, year after year, military exposure. But again, absolutely worth it.
What'd you get your degree in?
Political science.
Okay. So when you graduated, you had a job in the Navy. Some college graduates, they get their degrees and they got to figure out what's next. You had your next step. What was that? Did you enter into the realm of politics?
Not quite yet. So, you know, upon commissioning from Annapolis in the summer of 2004, I became a surface warfare officer, so a professional ship driver. So just about a month after I graduated from the academy, I headed out to Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, and I was assigned to a guided missile destroyer, DDG 60 USS Paul Hamilton. I spent 3 years on that ship as a junior officer in charge of a division, several divisions of sailors, but also learning professional ship handling, how to drive and navigate a warship over the course of 2 Western Pacific deployments. So that was absolutely my first and most formative job in the Navy. But yeah, it didn't put my political science degree quite to as good of a use initially as I thought.
If you're just tuning in, this is Nashville, and I'm your host, Khalil Ekolona. We're talking this hour with Naval Commander Lacey Popson. You know, you've been in the Navy for 20 years. You've had several different jobs in your career, I understand. Can you tell us about the different positions you've held?
Yeah, absolutely. So after my stint stationed out in Hawaii, the Navy does a great job of balancing, you know, our tours between sea duty and shore duty so that you get a little bit of downtime at a shore-based command. So I headed out to San Diego. That's actually where I learned that the Navy had a human resources community. And when I thought about a career of service and quality of life and, you know, potentially starting a family, that career path made a lot of sense to me. So about 5 years into my commitment, I laterally transferred into the Navy's HR community, and I've been doing HR work for the Navy ever since. I spent a good chunk of my time in the Pentagon in D.C., really being able to see how policy is shaped and executed at the very highest level. So that was certainly another high point and a very formative one in my career. I was fortunate enough to head back out to Hawaii to receive some joint training, right? My ability to interact and to serve with other services out at the U.S. Indo-Pacific headquarters in Hawaii. And now here I am back in Nashville doing my very first recruiting tour, my command tour, in charge of recruiting efforts across 7 states, you know, 40 different stations, in charge of about 200 recruiters on the ground here in the greater Nashville area.
You worked at the Pentagon. I mean, what's it like to work at the Pentagon? Does it feel like an office building or a command center?
A bit of both. I think that's a great way to describe it. A bit of both. It's certainly a maze. Takes you a good few weeks to figure out even where you're headed, which direction is up. But it is just a fascinating place to be. Certainly stressful, but you know, as a junior officer, just such a phenomenal leadership laboratory in terms of getting to interact with really senior, with military and civilian professionals, and seeing how policy is executed at the highest level.
You know, earlier in the show, we heard about the recruitment process for the Army. Is there anything different about that process for joining the Navy?
No, I would say we actually do things fairly similarly to our Army brethren. Navy just takes it to that next level.
Do you have to know how to swim?
You do. You absolutely do. I always tell folks, hey, you don't need to be the next Michael Phelps, right? But you do need to be comfortable in the water. Your swimming skills, your pool skills, your water survival skills are tested several times during the course of a Navy career.
What are some of the hot jobs that folks can get in the Navy? Anything that's surprising?
Navy offers so many opportunities to, you know, again, to really to serve and to see the world. All the special operations jobs are certainly appealing. You know, I get a lot of candidates who've seen the movie Top Gun and want to become a fighter pilot. Aviation jobs in the aviation community are hot commodities. You know, becoming a doctor, a Navy corpsman, those careers are often very popular. And then our nuclear pipeline, right? To be able to work on a reactor, whether it's aboard an aircraft carrier or a submarine, those are certainly skill sets that are lucrative and high paying as well.
Question for you: is there anything you would say specifically to someone who may feel intimidated about the idea of joining the Navy, or they might wonder if they'll fit in there?
Great question. And again, right now is such a phenomenal time to join the Navy. We're really focused on creating the most diverse, the most equitable, the most inclusive fighting force out there. So everyone, again, who's qualified to join is welcome to join and will feel that sense of serving and belonging to something bigger than themselves.
All right. So thinking back, if you could talk to that teenage version of yourself who was holding that acceptance letter to the Naval Academy, what would you tell her about what she would find and experience in the Navy?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, you know, my decision to choose Navy was the best of my life. You know, over the course of a 20-year career, I've seen over 30 countries. You know, the Navy has paid for not only my bachelor's degree, but my master's as well. Gives me a guaranteed paycheck, 30 days of annual paid leave, medical and dental care for life now. But really, it's that opportunity to serve along like-minded individuals, right? Service to something bigger than yourself is what truly matters at the end of the day. And the Navy provides for that in spades.
So why the Navy?
You know, my favorite slogan for the Navy was our old one, join the Navy, see the world. And again, that couldn't be more true. You know, not only have I had the opportunity to visit and deploy to many, many different countries, the Navy's got some great duty stations. You know, there's not too many of them that aren't on the water. So if you're looking for great places to, you know, to raise families, to build a life, and to start an adventure, the Navy is absolutely for you.
Commander Lacey Popson is the commanding officer of the Navy Talent Acquisition Group here in Nashville. Lacey, thank you for being here with us and thank you for your service.
Thank you so much.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're talking with a Marine about what it's really like to be one of the few, the proud. Stay with us. This is Nashville.
Hello, hello.
Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Cece's. I'm a producer on This Is Nashville. I'm here in the studio with Mareva Knight.
Hey.
And we are so happy to be here. You know, Commander Popson said that her favorite slogan in the Navy is join the Navy, see the world. And I have to say here at Public Radio, I would say turn on National Public Radio and hear the world. Hear about all stories that are from across the country and our state, and especially here on This Is Nashville, we work hard to make sure that we are covering all sorts of issues and featuring voices from just the diverse community that we have here.
That's right. That's right. I adore that you can turn on WPLN and you can hear local stories like the one you're hearing right now with This Is Nashville, you know, kind of locally driven. You can hear national, you can hear international, you can hear stuff about space. I mean, the limits are boundless. And it's all right here. And it is not subscription-based. It is giving-based. So we provide this service, this station, this website, these articles, podcasts, as I make. And then we ask you, what is it worth to you? What can you give that fits into your kind of budget and your life? And maybe that is a one-time gift of $20. And maybe that is becoming a Producer Circle member at $100 a month or a one-time gift of $1,200. The point is that you fit into whatever works for you. That's not really the right way. You fit into us however you want to fit into us. That's what I'm trying to say. So the most important thing is just to give what you can, to say thank you for this service that you rely on every single day. Go to WPLN.org or give us a call, 615-760-2010.
It's so easy to give now. And I just have to say, there is a very special name on the board to me. My mom, Sherry from Weymouth, Massachusetts, went ahead and gave a gift. Hi, Mom. I love you so much. Thank you for supporting WPLN. And I have to say, every gift matters and it really helps us. We try so hard at This Is Nashville, and I believe that we succeed in just covering many, many diverse stories like we've been talking about. We have an ongoing series on homelessness and the unhoused right now called In My Place. We recently had an episode covering SNAP benefits and the backlog there, produced by Elizabeth Burton. Another episode recently about healing trauma, produced by Magnolia McKay, which was beautiful. And I personally really enjoyed working on an episode in February about the Special Olympics Tennessee. We regularly have a Call the Mayor show, profiles of musicians, local politicians, local researchers, just all sorts of folks. And we even covered the Chinese New Year and with the start of the Year of the Dragon recently. So when you tune in, you're going to hear different things, and we love bringing all of those different stories to you, but it takes your support.
Yes, absolutely. This stuff takes your support. It is not cheap to make this. It is, you know, staffing, it is materials, it is studios, it is travel budgets. The work that I do takes sometimes years, and that means that we need that those donations to sustain us. So consider becoming a sustaining member. What that means is that you give on a monthly basis, and it helps us so much to plan our budget when we know that we'll be getting that same $10 or $20 or $50 from you every month. Please consider becoming a sustaining member. Join today. Do not wait. Again, Boyd, Sherry, Diana, Maria, Margaret, Victoria. Victoria says, I'm an avid listener. I used to pledge regularly, but my family's finances have been tight since COVID. Yes, we understand that. But guess what? You figured out the amount that was right for you. And thank you so much for doing that. We are so, so thankful for your gift today. Go to WPLN.org. Or again, if you want to talk to a person, give us a call, 615-760-2010. Now is the time to give. Support public radio. Support WPLN News.
And there is just so much that you can do. Whatever gift works for you, you know, I'm going to go ahead and ask for a big one. If someone is out there who really supports WPLN and gives us a $2,000 or a $5,000 gift, we will put that money to good use. There's so much that we can do, like having a translator for This Is Nashville, being able to have an internship program. There are things that we need that translate into tangible resources from your support. So call now, 615-760-2010, or go to WPLN.org.
I'm Khalil A. Colonna. And this is Nashville. What do you think of when you hear the word Marine? I think of discipline, a crisp blue uniform with a white hat, and take it or leave it, a certain kind of intensity. The Marine Corps is guided by the motto Semper Fidelis, which means always, always faithful. These days, the Marines talk about not being a brotherhood or a sisterhood, but a warriorhood. Here to share his experience with us is Staff Sergeant Brandon McCoppin. Brandon, welcome to This Is Nashville. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so people have a pretty clear idea of what the other branches of the military are and what they do. A lot of people know about the Marines, but they may not know exactly what the Marines do. Can you tell us what the Marines actually do?
Yeah, so you have the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. Obviously, they have their individual specialties in what they do, but the Marine Corps specifically combines all that together. But takes the individuals, puts them in a position where they're going to be challenged both physically and mentally and be able to perform at the highest level of their capability. So a big focus on small unit leadership and, you know, accomplishing the nation's battles.
Is it the toughest of the four branches?
I would say so, mainly specifically due to the expectations, the standards. There's an expectation when you think of the word Marine that someone that's going to be physically fit, someone that's going to be confident, someone that's going to seek on challenges head on. And the Marine Corps really embodies that.
So when you were growing up, did you know any Marines or anyone who served in the military?
Growing up, not for a while. I had no friends, no family in the military. The only person that I had interaction-wise was my assistant wrestling coach. He was the only one that I ever had any interaction from in the Marines.
What impression about the Marines did you have back then from your assistant wrestling coach?
He challenged us. I remember my first day at wrestling practice, he came out and led PT with us. He pushed us harder than I'd ever been pushed before. And at the same time, he didn't only tell us to do it, he did everything alongside us. So that's something that I really respected him for. He wasn't just talking the talk, but he was also walking the walk.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how did the idea of joining the Marines, like how did that specifically come to you?
So the idea came to me, I was in college for 2 years, and then towards the tail end, I had the understanding that college was just that. Like, it wasn't something that I ever really had a lot of interest in. The end result wasn't what I was looking for. I really enjoyed my time wrestling. I enjoyed the people that I was around, the camaraderie, things like that. And in that moment, I was sitting, I just got out of class. I got a phone call from a Marine Corps recruiter, and they asked, hey, had you ever thought about the military? And I said, not really, but if I were to ever do it, I would join the Marines. And they asked me, what did I know about the Marines? And that's where they kind of had me. I came in and I needed to come in and have that conversation and have that honest look in the mirror. Is this something that I want to do going forward?
What was it like as you were looking in the mirror after talking to the recruiters, learning everything about the Marines that you could up to that point? And you're sitting here, I got college, I have this path and this decision to make. You're looking in the mirror, talking to yourself. Talk to me about where you were at that time, and mentally and emotionally.
I would say it was really enlightening, because college was a decision that was made for me. I felt like it was one that was pushed for, as far as it was a social norm. It was, hey, I graduate high school, I go to college. Joining the Marine Corps was the first decision that I made for myself personally. It was something that we sat down, we had the conversation. It was more of them getting to know me about my short-term, long-term goals, and really, was the Marine Corps a good fit for me, and was I a good fit for the Marines? And after having that conversation and really learning not only a lot about the Marine Corps, but a lot about myself and the goals and the things that I was trying to accomplish, I would say it felt like a sense of relief, because it seemed like where I needed to be. It seemed like the challenges, the things that they embodied, were things that I was looking for in myself and the things that I needed in order to be successful.
When you made the decision to enlist, what happened next? Did you tell your family right away? Did you finish the semester, or did you withdraw from college?
So this was December 11th of 2014. So I got out of class. I was having I had that phone call. I went in, had the conversation with them, and they asked me, was it something that I wanted to do? When they asked me that question, there was no hesitation. I was like, this is something I want for myself. I came home and I just told my mom, hey, I'm joining the Marines. And she was kind of taken back at first, emotional, as you can expect as a parent. But at the same time, when I explained everything to her, the reasons that I wanted to do it, and I didn't ask her, I told her, hey, this is what I'm doing going forward, this is what I'll do for me. She respected that a lot more, that I had made that decision. I took some personal accountability, and I invited her to have the conversation with the recruiter as well, and the recruiter did the same. So I think that's a big part of it, was just involving my mom in the process, involving the people that I care about the most in the process. So they understood what I was doing, why I was doing it, and the things that I was looking to achieve out of it.
You said something. You said you told her, you didn't ask. So it was kind of one of your first bold moves as a young man, I imagine.
Absolutely. It was my first adult decision that I made purely for myself. And I was willing to accept the responsibility, whether it was, or the outcome, whether it was good or bad. It's something that I wanted for myself. And I feel like that's part of it, is you got to make those decisions sometimes.
Yeah. So boot camp for Marines is 13 weeks. Is it the longest boot camp of any of the services?
Yes, it is.
It is. What's it like?
Boot camp is very challenging, as you can imagine. It's you have the physical side, you have the mental side, but I would say mentally challenging more so than the physical. And the reason I say that is because everything that you know is normal, waking up whenever you want to, doing things like as you please, or you're kind of removed from that, and your whole world's turned upside down. But the reason behind it makes sense. It's 13 weeks of training. The only way you can communicate outside of the training is via letters, but that's to get you immersed in the training. So they take you from civilian to Marine. It's a hard process, but they got to eliminate 18 years. We'll say 18. The age to join the Marines is 18 to 28. So they have to take that prior history, those bad habits. You're removing those, and you're forging a better product at the end of the day. It takes a lot to turn someone from civilian to Marine. So
tell me about your first day of boot camp. Were you nervous? Were you scared? Like, what went down?
I'd say definitely nervous. There's a surreal moment when you're first there. Like, within that first week, it's definitely the hardest, because, like I said earlier, your whole world turned upside down. But it gets to a point where you understand, hey, I am at Marine Corps boot camp and I have 13 weeks. It's going to be challenging, but at the end of the day, this is something that I signed up for. This is something that I want for myself, and it's something that's going to better me overall as a person. So me, that kind of came on day three or day four.
Okay.
And it was the middle of the night. I think it was like 2 a.m., and I had my hands on, we call it foot lockers, like a little dresser thing. And I closed my eyes. I was like, when I open my eyes, my hands are going to be on my dresser. And open them, and I was in the squad bay, still at boot camp. So it was pretty surreal at that point, but I knew what I was getting myself into, and I was pretty excited for the way forward.
What was it like with the other members you were going through boot camp with? Did you all kind of rally together?
So boot camp is geared around, like, the team. It's very team-oriented. You only speak in third person. There's no I, me, my, any of that stuff. So you're only as good as your weakest link, we'll say. But at the same time, they're going to put you in positions where you fail. Everybody's going to get to that point to where you're going to struggle. And there's an expectation as a recruit that you help those that are down, and you ultimately get the team across. If the team doesn't succeed, then no one succeeds.
What did you learn about failure in boot camp?
I learned that failure is an opportunity to learn. It's necessary for you to grow as an individual. The Marine Corps is going to put you in a lot of positions where you're going to fail. It's like there's no way around it. Mm. But at the end of the day, what it does is it allows you, when you're faced with that same situation or circumstance in the future, that you understand the feelings that you're getting are real, and you understand how to manage it and move around it and accomplish the mission regardless.
So you really learned how to break through, huh?
Yes.
What job did you take?
So I do communications maintenance. So I work on specifically IT equipment, so anything with routers, switches, servers, anything like that.
Why'd you choose that work?
I chose it more specifically because, yes, I wanted a challenge from the Marines, but I wanted to have a marketable skill as well. And that was part of that conversation that I had with the recruiter, is understanding that the Marine Corps is not all running, gunning, shooting, kicking indoors. That, yes, you get the opportunity to do that, but at the same time, you can have a technical skill that's marketable in the civilian sector as well, and be able to not only get the training, but get the experience that necessary in order to be successful at it. But that's ultimately why I chose it.
Went from communications, but now you work in recruiting. How'd you end up making that transition? Were there jobs in between, or you just jumped?
So I do communications maintenance, but after my first enlistment, I was offered the opportunity to do a tour on recruiting duty. They're called special duty assignments. That way you can be that much more malleable or that much more resilient when it comes to learning new skills. So just being able to take on a different career path entirely and being able to learn that skill, but you do it for 3 years and then you come back to doing your primary job. So I actually leave here in May and I go back to doing communications maintenance.
What's your favorite part about working as a recruiter?
I would say having the conversations with individuals that don't know a lot about it, like myself. It's a conversation that I wish I would have had sooner because I would have eliminated the 2 years of college, because this is what I wanted initially. It just took a little bit to recognize it. But the thing I would say as far as like the best thing about it is enlightening people about the opportunities through the Marines, showing them what a pathway could look like for them, and helping them on their way to success. If someone needs direction, then the Marine Corps can definitely provide that.
You're married, you have 2 kids, right?
Correct.
When did you first meet your spouse, before or after joining the Marines?
I met my spouse before the Marines.
Okay. Were you dating at the time when you made the decision?
Yes. So I made the decision when we were dating. And then, like, similar, when I came home and I told my mom that I was joining the Marines, I told her as well. Obviously, there were some reservations, but at the end of the day, she understood this is what I wanted for myself. This is what I wanted to grow as a person, and supported me all the way through it.
We hear a lot that military communities can be close-knit and their support services, but primarily the family support is the most important. But we also hear about the strain that service can be on families, whether it's kind of the mental toll of just serving or other things. So what does your family or your spouse's support, what does it mean to you?
It means everything. If they don't have the support, then I'm not able to do my job to the highest capacity. So having a good support system for them, making sure that both my daughter and my son are taken care of, and not just the bare minimum, but allowing them to be able to thrive and thoroughly enjoy what I do, that's extremely important to allow me to do what I do.
What do you need from your job and from the Marines that helps make sure that you can show up for your family the way you have been?
I would say overall support. The Marine Corps is very tight-knit. It's a brotherhood, sisterhood. So I know that I can depend on anyone, whether I'm present or not present, to take care of my family. If it's something as simple as, picking my kids up from school or something because my wife's at work, or allowing my My wife's been a stay-at-home mom for the last 10 years, so it's allowed her the ability, my job specifically, to, you know, be able to take care of my kids, raise my kids, and, you know, just be that support system that she is.
You know, are there any big misconceptions about the Marines that you end up hearing? Like in the questions that people ask when you're talking to them on these recruiting missions that you're on, what are some of the big misconceptions you're hearing from folks?
Some of the big misconceptions I would hear are that the Marine Corps is all running, gunning, shooting, kicking in doors. Like I said earlier, they don't understand that we have a plethora of other jobs, and anything from intelligence to military police, IT, cyber. But we also have the combat jobs too that a lot of people are looking for. So that's one of the big misconceptions. And at the same time, I would say that the Marine Corps is very challenging, but at the same time, they help you get through it. So that's probably the big ones.
You know, a lot of folks might have this idea that Marines are tough, disciplined, but maybe kind of unfeeling and cold in a way. What would you say to someone who thinks that?
I would say from the outside looking in, someone or like me personally, like I had no exposure, no experience with the Marines prior. So when I came home and I told everybody that I was joining the Marines, there was a lot of people like, you're crazy, that it's all run and gun, and the same common misconceptions that you hear, but a lot of it's hearsay. Unless you get the information straight from the horse's mouth, then it's hard to really draw an accurate conclusion as to what that military branch would be. So to answer your question, what I would say is, I mean, Marines are human too. Whenever I take the uniform off, yes, I'm still a Marine, and I'm Staff Sergeant McCoppin when I'm at work, but Brandon is still there. So I do a lot of hunting and fishing. I still have a personality. I'm married, two kids, so I'm able to be a father, a husband, and myself as well as a Marine.
Staff Sergeant Brandon McCoppin is a Marine who currently is stationed in Middle Tennessee working in recruitment. Brandon, thank you so much for being here today, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for tuning in this hour. This is Nashville as a production of Nashville Public Radio. Today's episode was produced by Catherine Cecis. It was directed by Tasha A.F. Limley. Our board operator is Liv Lombardi. The masterminds behind our theme music are LaRange and Namir Blade. You can listen back at thisisnashville.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And the conversation doesn't end here. Tweet us at This Is Nashville. Find us on Instagram and tell us what you want from our show by filling out our quick survey online. This is Nashville. I'm Khalil Ekolona. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody, and be good to each other.